The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Luke O'Neill is with us from Trinity College Dublin. Good morning to you, Luke.
Good morning, Jonathan. How's it going?
I'm very good. That photograph, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it just shows you that without intervention here, without the actions that we have all taken, we could be in a very different landscape. Because in Brazil, they tried virtually nothing, and look at the outcome.
Exactly, and it's just the evidence, Jonathan, in many ways. I mean, there's still some COVID deniers out there, remember, saying it's not that serious, it's just all made up. Look at Manaus, look at Brazil, all of Brazil is in trouble, and there's horrendous scenes coming from that country, you know. And as you say, John, the main reason is it went unmitigated there, and they didn't observe all the guidelines, and look what's happened. So it's a very salutary lesson in many ways.
The good news, of course, is that something you've been advocating for quite a while could be about to happen, which is that we spread out the length of time between doses of Pfizer and Moderna from currently 4 weeks. They probably won't go as far as 12 weeks, which they've done in the UK. But like the net effect of that will be more people getting a vaccine quickly and that vaccine being quite effective for those people.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, we've been saying this for a while now, and the UK are doing it, you know. In fact, the British Society for Immunology, my august body in many ways, you know, they convinced the British government to do this because of immunological reasons, and the Finns are doing it. And what it means is, as you say, more vaccine in people's arms more quickly, and you get your second shot later anyway. Like a gap of 3 months wouldn't make that big a difference, say, to how effective this vaccine is going to be, you know. And then I saw yesterday, I think I mentioned this yesterday, Rachel Lavin in the Business Post, she's done the numbers. And if we get the vaccine into people's arms now as quick as we can, we'll make the 80% by the end of May, and that pushes the time, you know, towards us, which is a great development in many ways. In other words, the end game gets closer if we get the vaccine out as quickly as we can. So I can't see them not going along with this, because they haven't said yes, they're still deliberating, you know, but we're all hoping that they will extend that gap.
The hesitancy, of course, would be that if we give everybody the first dose, something might go wrong with supply, and then we won't have the second dose available, and as a consequence of that, you might see the whole project faltering. Are they more confident now? I mean, Pfizer seemed to be the ones, if you were to put money on any horse in the race, Pfizer would be the ones you could rely on.
Well, they're obviously checking that. I mean, one reason for their delay might be to just make sure, you know, to double check that the risk of supply going down is low, you know, and then once they're happy with that, they say they'll press go on it. Because it is a concern, obviously, if the second shot doesn't come in, you know. The second thing is, Jonathan, certain people, say if you have cancer or you're immunosuppressed, you should take the second shot more quickly, you see, because you probably won't respond that well to the first shot, you know. So again, that'll be part of the guidelines as well. So it isn't as simple as let's all get the vaccine out quickly, you know. So I understand their slight caution on this one for Ireland specifically. The UK obviously had loads of AstraZeneca and they could do it because they'd no issue about supply, you see. So, but in Ireland's case, let's make sure we have sufficient supply into the coming months. I've no doubt we will have done. I mean, the news gets good on that all the time. Pfizer are basically turning every factory they can find almost in America into a vaccine manufacturing plant because that vaccine is so effective, you see. So again, the issue of supply is something that we're not as concerned about.
The legendary Dr. Fauci came out over the weekend as well on the Johnson & Johnson issue. I think the EMA are due to issue their ruling on Thursday. That's most likely going to at least start that rollout, possibly with restrictions, but we can't predict that. Fauci was kind of saying that he thinks that J&J is going to resume and almost suggested that even the American decision-making process could be escalated and they might issue something before the end of this week.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, the guideline will probably be over 30s. It's kind of settling at that level, you know, because if you're over 30, you're still at reasonable risk of getting disease. Obviously, as you get older, it gets more and more severe, hence the over 60s is our guideline here. But it wouldn't surprise me to say, look, let's go for the over 30s. Let's put a label on the box. There is a risk of clotting, 1 in 1 million, remember, of death, which is tiny, but it's still there. I mean, the fact that this vaccine can kill you, even if it's 1 in 1 million, is still something to be aware of, you know, so we understand that. And understand the caution as a result. I think the most important development as well last week, there's a treatment for this clotting now. It's called IVIG, which hospitals have routinely, you know. So if someone does develop symptoms of this clotting, rare clot, the doctor can treat you, you see, and that gives us more confidence again. So it's a moving thing, obviously, and we'll see. And we're waiting, aren't we, yet again? We're waiting for the EMA to make a statement and then the FDA in the US. But I've no doubt that that vaccine will come back because it's a very efficacious, very safe vaccine is the bottom line.
And if we were, and let's not try to get ahead of ourselves here, if we were to end up in a situation where the J&J vaccine does get the go-ahead and we get the 600,000 doses in Q2 and Pfizer's extra doses are coming in right now, it seems as if they are coming in pretty quickly. The landscape could change quite a lot if they change the interval between the doses.
That's right. That's where there's grounds for optimism on the vaccination campaign. And Micheál Martin might win, basically. Because can you imagine if by the end of May he meets his 80% target and that's 4 weeks ahead of schedule? That's a great success, isn't it? You know, and so that's why I suspect they will extend the interval between the two doses. Mm-hmm. Even if it's 2 or 3 weeks later, it doesn't matter that much, really. I mean, obviously, we'd like to do it as quickly as possible, but it's all heading in the right direction, basically. And then never forget, there are three more vaccines about to be approved in Europe, so there'll be even more supply then, you know. So the future looks pretty bright in terms of vaccine supply.
Well, good luck to everybody if they are heading off this morning to get their vaccine, because I'm conscious the vaccination centres after the usual slightly weekend lethargic approach that we still have in this country, that there'll be lots of people quite excited, probably slightly nervous, but look, the outcome is only positive. And speaking to people who have had the two doses, it is like meeting people from whom the weight of the world has been lifted from their shoulders.
Exactly.
It really, really is. It kind of makes you jealous of the older cohort. But as I said, we'll all get there eventually. Look, let's talk about travel, because there are still those out there harbouring in hope that they'll get away for the summer. I still think it's a little bit too much to ask. But the US, they're starting to move around a lot more in America, aren't they?
They are. And on the news, John, the great in Australia, they've opened up Australia and New Zealand. And in Wellington, you see, John, in Wellington Airport, there was a massive sign saying welcome, right? And they got 24,000 bottles of sparkling wine, which they cracked open as people arrived into New Zealand. So the level of joy here allowing travel between those two countries is huge. Can you imagine when we start to travel, the level of excitement will be the same, you know? And then in the US, I mean, it's opening up there for definite. The prices are going up, which is the first sign there's more movement, you know, same with hotels. The cruise industry is about to restart. Now, what they're doing is they're leaving from ports in Mexico because the CDC have not given permission yet for cruises to leave America. You know, so the cruise companies have said, oh, we'll go from Mexico. There was one round the world things, $40,000 ticket. Jonathan sold out within a few hours, you know.
Well, so the Americans, hang on. There's a lot more I'd do with 40,000 euros than stick myself on a boat.
I know. But it's amazing. I mean, obviously, the reason for this, John, is very simple. You've never seen a vaccination campaign like it ever in the history of the world, as in the United States of America. You know, they're getting 4 million doses a day into people's arms, which is a huge number of people, obviously. They're getting to 50% having one shot. And remember, to reiterate, Jonathan, the single shot is highly efficacious. So obviously, they're now realizing, look, the vaccination program means people can start traveling again. And the CDC issued the guidelines to say, if you've been vaccinated, you can travel anywhere in the US, you see. So all the travel industry now is ramping up hugely as a result of this.
Mm. Well, there is continuing talk of this digital green certificate. Now, I love the way that nobody liked the idea of having a COVID passport, so they've just changed the name of it to a digital green certificate, which is a terribly bad labelling exercise. How is that going to work, and how will it not fall foul at some point if somebody bring in a court challenge to it saying, hang on a second, I don't have to get the vaccine, so therefore I should be entitled to travel even if I'm not vaccinated?
They're being very careful with it, and the word vaccine doesn't appear in it, you're right, because that might agitate people who don't want the vaccine, for instance, and there's a civil liberty question about these things, you know. But what it's very clear now, the EU have said by the middle of June, you can get one of these digital green certificates. Now, to get one, you have to either have the vaccine, proof you've been infected is a second possibility, or thirdly, definite evidence you're negative for COVID, you see. Any one of those would allow you to upload on your phone this green certificate, and that would allow you to travel between European countries. That's what this certificate's about, you know. So it's going to take a few more weeks to work out the wrinkles and so on, you know. But they're very happy with this. I mean, Eduardo Santander, no less a man, he's the head of the European Travel Commission. He said, finally, we have a solution to coordinating travel across Europe, because obviously it's just to harmonise things between countries. And the goal of this certificate is to allow people to travel, to allow the tourism industry to come back, and obviously to travel to visit friends and family and so on, you know.
Jonathan Healy in for Pat Kenny this morning. We're speaking with Luke O'Neill. What about the person who has had COVID relatively recently, i.e. like in France, lots of them have it right now, and they'd say, well, I don't want to get the vaccine now because I have natural immunity. They're not going to have a green passport, though, are they? Because they haven't got the shot.
No, they will. It's still being worked out. Let's say that for a kickoff. But there is a proposal to say, if you can prove you've been infected, and what that might mean is antibody tests, or there'll be some way to test that you've definitely had the virus, you will be allowed to travel with a certificate. Now, that's the bit they're trying to figure out, basically, you see. And it's not unreasonable, because we now know from several studies, if you've been infected, you have an 85% decreased risk of getting reinfected in the coming months, you know? It's a bit like a vaccine, basically. So in other words, that'll be part of this summer. It won't just be you have to be vaccinated to get one. It could well be, if you have evidence of infection, you might be allowed to get one of these certificates. But they're still examining that. But that's the proposal, interestingly, that might suffice, you see. So it's a strange one, isn't it? Because you might think it has to involve vaccination, but it might go beyond that into natural infection allowing, which does make sense, John, because, as I say, there's evidence that being infected will protect you.
Yeah, but at the same time, then, how do you prove you were infected, now that you weren't asymptomatic and had a very low level of infection versus somebody who had lots of it and was a super spreader? Exactly. So it could get very confusing very quickly. A couple of News Talk texts that have come in. Leo Faradker says, one listener said, the older groups with an application for their second vaccine should go ahead. What does Luke think? My mother is due her second this week. I'm presuming that referencing AstraZeneca there. What should somebody who is in between doses of AstraZeneca do, Luke?
Go for it, for definite. Remember, the clotting thing happens after the first shot anyway. The evidence is strong for that now. So if you have, even though it's extremely rare, yet again, if you haven't had any problems after your first shot, go for the second, because there's an even tinier risk of it going wrong with the second shot, you know, overall. Now, there will be one or two cases, of course, but overall, the second shot is the way to go. And then you're bulletproof. Remember, that second shot will give you the absolute guaranteed protection for months and months ahead. The reason for the second shot, actually, is to give you a durable response. That's the main reason. That could last for a year, maybe, you know. So that's why we should all get the second shot if we're offered it.
And when the Pfizer boss comes out and says, oh, we're working on the third shot, how many shots are Pfizer going to give us of this over time? Which would be a question that most people would legitimately ask.
I suspect that was his marketing department, Jonathan, to say that. He's been a bit clever there. That was a strange one. I mean, he's kind of saying a booster shot against the variants, maybe, if you read between the lines slightly, you know. A bit like flu, you know. You might have a shot every winter.
Hang on. They're telling us that the variants, they're not overly concerned about the impact of the variants on the vaccine, yet at the same time, they're telling us that there might be a booster.
Well, it would make sense. You can imagine, just in case there's a risk from the variants, you might as well stick them in the new vaccine. You need two for the price of one, then, away, you know. That would be a sensible thing to do, you know. So I wouldn't worry about that specifically. I mean, the word about the variants is getting somewhat better, in that you may get infected if you have the old vaccine with a variant, but the vaccine will protect you from severe disease. That seems to be getting a bit stronger, you know. It won't work completely, because these variants are slightly different, you know, but it won't develop into severe disease.
Well, they have identified the first of the Indian variants in Israel. So it'll be very interesting to see how that works out. Yeah. Does it spread? Do they pick up more of it, or will the vaccine work against it? Another text from a News Talk listener. I had COVID. I got the all clear 3 weeks ago. I want to check my antibodies. How many weeks after the all clear should I get this done? And I suppose, more importantly, how do you get it done?
Yeah, it's not easy. You've got to do it in the hospital, first of all, because it's a tricky enough way to test. But you can do it with the tests, of course. The antigen test is one that will pick up antibodies to antigen. But the most reliable way is through a proper clinical service, you know, is the main way to pick up antibodies. It's something you wouldn't be doing routinely. I mean, that's why the certificate is going to have to come up with a way to measure that. You know, that gets a bit complicated, you know. But we do know that people, even weeks and weeks after infection or after vaccination, will have high levels of antibodies. That's been shown in lots of scientific studies, but it's not a trivial thing to measure accurately. It has to be done in a proper setting.
Anya got in contact to 53106 here at News Talk. Please ask Luke if clotting as an anti-immune response could continue as an ongoing autoimmune with further possible clots. So I'm wondering, she's obviously worried about her autoimmune response if she has an autoimmune issue.
Yeah, this clotting business is extremely rare, and the other good news is they know what it is. You make antibodies to your own platelets. So the platelets are an important part of your blood that participate in clotting. And now you begin to activate the platelets inappropriately with an immune response, and your body makes antibodies to your own platelets. So it's called an autoimmune situation. But there's many autoimmune diseases, and we know what the autoimmune reaction is too, and it wouldn't be the platelets, you know. So in other words, if you have an autoimmune disease, that doesn't put you at increased risk of this rare disease. That's what the evidence would suggest at the moment, you know. And as to the thing being ongoing, again, you do get that in some autoimmune diseases. They flare and they go into remission. There's no evidence of that happening with this clotting situation. It seems to be a one-off big autoimmune reaction, you know. But still, we don't know. I mean, it's obviously so rare. It's very hard to answer some of these things because it's still very much a work in progress.
Asthmatics, like myself, have obviously been a little bit on tenterhooks, no more than anybody who's got an underlying condition for the last while. I mean, I take an inhaler every day and have been hospitalised twice in the last decade with asthma. So therefore, I'm kind of a little bit nervous about the whole thing, which would explain why I'm staying a million miles away from most people. But now the latest suggestion is that asthmatics are not at more risk. Tell us about the studies.
Yeah, there was a study, I guess, a few months ago now. And in fact, I first heard of this as an asthma expert I collaborate with. He's in Australia. His name is Phil Hansborough. And he was telling me, in the hospital, they're noticing you rarely see asthmatics coming in with severe COVID. And that was a bit surprising because obviously COVID is a lung disease. And if you had another lung disease, it might make your disease worse, you see. And whereas with another lung disease called COPD, they were appearing more with severe COVID. And that kind of was interesting, you know. And then they began to dig into it a bit more. And then now this 18 separate studies have confirmed asthma does not put you at increased risk of COVID, which is good, isn't it? Because people worried, oh, if I'm asthmatic, I might, you know, get more severe disease. But now, massive analysis says that if you have asthma, it doesn't put you in a vulnerable group. Now, the other lung disease, Jonathan, this COPD, that's obstructive pulmonary disease, that does put you at increased risk because that's sort of a more damaging lung disease, I suppose. And the lungs are now much weaker and therefore the virus gets in more, you know. But the good news for asthmatics is that doesn't put you in a high-risk group.
Okay, well, that's good news, at least. Does it mean that I'm not going to get my vaccine when I'm expecting it then? Because I think I'm eligible from today. You see, you're now scuppered it for me, Luke. I was planning on having a great
Jonathan.
Summer.
You go to the back of the queue now, sorry, as Leo would say, so I hate to say
that. There's a long queue at the back of the queue at this point. You started the conversation by telling everybody it could be done by the end of May if we do it right.
Yeah, no,
Luke,
yeah.
Absolute pleasure as always. We'll talk to you again on Thursday morning. Professor Luke O'Neill from the Department of Immunology at Trinity College Dublin.